Welcome to 500 Greatest Songs, a podcast based on Rolling Stone's hugely popular, influential, and sometimes controversial list. I'm Brittany Spanos.
And I'm Rob Sheffield. We're here to shed light on the greatest songs ever made and discover what makes them so great.
From classics like Fleetwood Mac's Dreams to the Ronettes' Be My Baby, and modern day classics like The Killers' Mr. Brightside.
Listen to Rolling Stone's 500 Greatest Songs on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
The Therapy for Black Girls podcast is your space to explore mental health, personal development, and all of the small decisions we can make to become the best possible versions of ourselves. I'm your host, Dr. Joy Harden Bradford, a licensed psychologist in Atlanta, Georgia, and I can't wait for you to join the conversation every Wednesday. Listen to the Therapy for Black Girls podcast on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts. Take good care, and we'll see you there.
Hey, I'm Jay Shetty, and I'm the host of the On Purpose podcast, and I had the opportunity to talk to one of Hollywood's major icons, Michael B. Jordan. In our conversation, Michael shares the highs, the lows, and everything in between, offering a genuine glimpse into his world.
The closest to getting what you want is always the hardest. People give up right before they get what they've always wanted to get.
Listen to On Purpose with Jay Shetty on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Every week on Talk Easy with Sam Fragoso, I invite an artist, writer, or politician to come to the table and speak from the heart in ways you probably haven't heard from them before. Some of my favorites are with Tom Hanks, Questlove, and Cate Blanchett. In recent weeks, I had talked to actor Dan Levy, director Ava DuVernay, and the editor of The New Yorker, David Remnick. You can listen to Talk Easy on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
As the number one audio company, iHeartMedia gives you access to all, every audience, live conversations, trusted influencers, and the insights and data you need to grow. iHeartMedia is your access company. Go to iHeartResults.com for more.
Well, all right, y'all. All across the USA, Compton Watts, Bay to LA, Pomona, California, from valley to valley, we represent that killer county. So if you're keeping it real on your side of your town, you tune in to Gangsta Chronicles.
Gangsta Chronicles, we gon' tell you how it goes.
If I lie, my nose will grow like Pinocchio. We gon' tell you the truth and nothing but the truth.
Gangsta Chronicles, this is not your average show.
You're now tuned into the real MCA, Big James, and Big Stale.
This is strictly from the streets.
Hello.
We represent the streets.
Welcome to the Gangsta Chronicles podcast, a production of iHeartRadio and Black Effect Podcast Network. Make sure you download the iHeart app and subscribe to the Gangsta Chronicles. For my Apple users, hit the purple mic on your front screen, subscribe to the Gangsta Chronicles, and leave a 5-star rating and comment.
We'd like to welcome everyone to another episode of the Gangsta Chronicles podcast, and I got my dog in here.
Chill.
And you know, we got the legendary journalist extraordinaire, Soren Baker.
What's up, everybody?
Yeah, you know, we're doing this Thanksgiving style, man. You know, it's Thanksgiving, man. I can't ask them, the homies, to come out for Thanksgiving because we're going to be at home cooking turkeys and roasts and all that other good stuff. You know what I'm saying? So we're doing this on the live stream tonight, man. We got a legend in the motherfucking house, man. Dude that had two albums in the top 50 gangster rap albums of all time. Spice One. What's happening, dog?
What is it, man? What's happening, my guy?
Oh, man, you know what, man? Everybody been asking us to have you back. They was like, man, why you didn't ask him about this? Why you didn't ask him about that last time? So we said we would have another one where we go a little bit more in depth with you, man, as far as all the legendary stuff you done, man.
Oh, man, I appreciate it. You know what I'm saying? You know, it's been, what, 30 years? So, you know, that's 30 years of historical gangster rap shit. You know what I'm saying?
Oh, for sure. Yes, indeed. Yes, indeed. And you happen to get put in the game by one of the pioneers in the game, man, as far as street rap go. And the Pimpology, man, Too Short himself, man. How did you link up with Too Short, man?
I mean, you know, Short used to come pick me up from school back in the day. I think I was like 16. We got an album called The Dangerous Crew. It was crazy because I took the album back to school. You know, I was walking back to school with the album and shit. showing everybody, you know, hey, you know, I got an album too short. So I mean, yeah, you know, even back then, you know, just let motherfuckers know why I'm in, even in high school, you know what I'm saying, what I was kind of knew what I was headed for, you know, knew what my final destination would be to, you know, hook up with my guy MCA and do some gangster rap shit. You know what I'm saying?
Hold up right quick, Spice. Still, what you got hanging by you? Some pantyhose or a purse or something? What's that hanging by you?
I'm in Japan, man. You know,
I'm looking at Steel. What the hell is that by your head, my nigga?
It's a Japanese lamp.
I'm not even talking. My bad, Spice. I'm not even talking about you. I'm talking about Steel lamp. What the hell is that, Steel in the corner? Yeah, what's that, my nigga?
That's a bag, dog. Stay focused, bro. Stay focused. That's an Adidas bag, dog. That's like a $300 bag.
Nigga, that motherfucker looked like an old fucking thing your grandma used to have hanging on the bathroom door when she used to have to, you know, clean that twat out. That's what that looked like. Hey,
stay focused, bro.
That nigga said it was some panties.
I thought it was some pantyhose or something hanging, my nigga.
That's crazy. Spice, we're going to get back to the interview, dog. So you linked up with Too Short, right?
After this interlude.
Yeah.
Wow.
So you linked up with Short Man, and what happened after that? When did you, like, what happened?
He picked me up with one of the biggest B-boys in the town at that time in the Bay, you know, within the town, you know. And, you know, I didn't even really know who the cat was in the back seat. You know, he was just one of the biggest bosses in the town at that time. You know what I'm saying? He was really, really relevant. You know, in the Bay we call a nigga a factor if he's sticking out, if he's standing out, we call him a factor. So, you know, dude was a factor in the town. When I say the town, I mean Oakland, you know what I'm saying? So, dude was a factor in the town, but I didn't know. You know what I'm saying? I'm a youngster. You know, I hop in the car, you know, he started talking shit on Hayward ass nigga. I'm like, oh, nigga, you know, because he was a chubby nigga. I was like, yeah, nigga, you a professional birthday cake eating ass nigga. You don't be the first nigga to cut the cake at everybody else's birthday party. I just got on him. You know what I'm saying? As soon as I got in the back seat. So, I mean, you know, but, you know, we turned out to be real good friends, and we go up to the studio and record, and, you know, every time the police roll by looking for somebody else, you know, he'll start looking around, thinking, they ain't chasing you, thinking, you know, I didn't know, but they probably would. I mean, you know.
He was on his ass, probably.
Yeah, we was around, you know, I was around a lot of shit back then in the town, but. You know, Pops was a real serious dude. I remember he called us Short up to the house one day, and he was like, you know, he told me, he was like, man, I need to holler at Too Short. I need to holler at your homeboy Short and his manager. And I'm like, you know, damn, you know, what do you want to holler? He gonna fuck everything up, you know what I'm saying? So, but Pops, I guess, you know, he was just, you know, he just told, you know, Short and them that, you know, make sure, take care of his son and make sure he's straight and, or whatever, you know what I'm saying? Because he came back and told me what he told him. He said, I told him, you know, make sure that you straight and take care of you. Make sure you ain't up in no bullshit and all of that. And I'm thinking back in my head, Pops, I'm already in the bullshit.
Short plugged you up with Jive?
Well, no. After what this was like 80, I was like 16 back then. This was like 86 when I was rocking with Short from the beginning. After, you know, 16, maybe four years later, I'm 18, 20. I put out 187 Proof. It was in all of the record stores and it was independent. So
Triad Records.
Yeah, he was on Triad Records, and with George L. Willis, and that's when Barry called this guy named Pizzo. Pizzo, the beat fixer. You know what I'm talking about? Hey, OG Pizzo.
Mm-hmm.
He used to DJ for Short and 40. You know what I'm saying? So I guess, you know, I was at Pizzo house and Jive Records, one of the representatives called, and it was Barry Wise. He was more than, he was running. He was like,
that's one of the biggest
dialogues. Fucking charge. And he called and he like, you know, where's Spice One at? He asking Pizzo where I'm at. And I'm sitting there like, tell him right here. Tell him I'm right here. And Pizzo like, you know, hold on, you know, let you, this some serious shit, man. Let your lawyers talk to this nigga, man. You know what I'm saying? So, you know, and then eventually I connected with Barry and got him in touch with my lawyers and everything and my people and management and stuff. And, you know, from then on, you know, that's when we dropped the whole album. We took the songs from the first EP and added some more, another 8 or 9 songs and released the first Spice One album on Jive.
For sure. You know what everybody say about Jive Records from UGK on to you? They say Jive don't like paying motherfuckers, and they had the same experience with the people he was fucking with over there.
Jive Ass Records.
Jive Ass Records, man. UGK said they never saw royalty from that motherfucker.
Yeah, Angle, man.
Well, that was shit.
Nobody.
I can speak on that. That's because we was getting budgets of anywhere between 250 and 300 grand. Okay. And they looked at it like a lot of you niggas is doing your own shit. You get me? So, cause that's where it laid with me. I didn't see a royalty check because they spending more than you making back. They're going to recoup what? 90% of what they give you, right?
Yeah.
We making what? You lucky to make 70 cents a record, okay? So you ain't going to see a royalty check because we gave you 350 up front, right? Then you got what? 3 videos. We spent about 85 to 100 grand on videos. So when you thinking like, yeah, man, I'd have sold a platinum record, nigga, I'm finna see some bread. They go, no, that motherfucking million and something that you owe is coming out of your 70 cents. It don't come out of the motherfucking, yeah, you sold a million records, so about 7 to 10 million came in. But no, you still owe us a million point whatever out of your 70 cents.
Out of your 70 cents,
you owe us 100 and you owe us a million and something. So that's why a lot of niggas try to be smart and take that budget and pocket that budget. You get me? That advance, so to speak. Mm-hmm. So if you a nigga controlling your own destiny, you get me? And you walking in there and you like, yeah, I'm 8 Hype Productions, nigga. I'm finna produce MCH's new record and blah, blah, blah. They finna cut me a check for 300 grand. And then I'm finna go back to the house and I'm finna record that motherfucker in my motherfucking bathroom or my bedroom. You get me?
Yeah, that was the only way.
And I'm finna cut. And then I'm finna motherfucking double back. And I'm finna produce the motherfucker myself. Me and DJ Slip. So I'm finna break Slip or whatever I'm finna assume. Because I don't have a budget, like, right? My budget ain't a fucking Dr. Dre or Snoop Dogg's budget. I got a fucking MC8 budget. What am I, you getting? I can't afford to give a nigga $30,000 a track how they was getting back in the days, you get me? I can't afford to give a nigga $100,000 a track. So I'm finna learn how to turn this fucking MPC on and get with my nigga Slip. And we finna produce this motherfucking record. So there go, I keep that money. You getting? I keep the production because if you was a nigga from our era, you wouldn't get no royalty check. It was just unheard of. It was a royalty
check.
I don't
even get
no royalty check. Niggas ate off of them advances and off of show money. Period.
The cold part about that. Is if they spent $200,000 on releasing your album all together, You know, they're going to say, you know, we spent $200,000 releasing your album. We need our money back out of your 70 cent a record. When you do the math, you know, because I look at my album, I say, okay, you know, CDs was going for about, you know, shit, damn near $20 a CD, you know, $19, $18 a CD or whatever.
Everyone's
talking
CDs.
Times that. You times that by 900,000.
That wasn't what we was getting, though. You see, that's come from the spec. That comes from the motherfucking distributors. You get me? The distributors know. The distributors would buy this shit from motherfuckers like Sony and them for about $9.99 or $10.52. That's what their motherfucking CD sold for, right? Now, once they get the motherfucking tower or something, tower gonna rank that motherfucker up to what? Still $15.99, $16.99. But I know as a motherfucker, basically the record label sold their product to the one stops and the whatever, you buy that motherfucker for $9.99 or $10.52.
Well, actually, yeah, because you got to remember the record company, they getting anywhere, when it first came out during the first 90 days, they might give it up for $7. Anywhere from $6 to $7.
Yeah, yeah. They trying to do that promo. They trying to get you on that promo. So if you rush and buy a certain amount within that first 30 days, they'll let you get it for $7.
And then you got to remember, they was charging them for shelf space back then. So if you had like the end cap, like at a Tower Records or a listening station or whatever, they may give it to them for $5. Then, you know, everybody made money except the artists.
Exactly.
They were selling merchandise too. You know, like we would do big tours. Like, you know, I did a tour with me, R. Kelly, Nia, H-Town, Too Short and Scarface, and we was at Grambling State University, and you know I had Roger Troutman's tour bus. He let me use his tour bus. 40 was in his own tour bus, you know, right behind us, doing his own thing. He funded his own shit, you know. He was a hustler, you know what I'm saying? And I brought 40 along with us, and we toured doing shows. They was getting money from the t-shirts and like, cause what I pulled up to Grambling State University, man, and I seen, you know, my fans with the Spice One hats, t-shirts, jackets, the whole same jackets I wore, they hair done like mine, you know, with the braids and shit like that, you know. And you know, as far as the merchandising, we didn't see no money from that shit either. I didn't see no money from the merch and stuff, from them big tours and shows. I didn't see a dime from none of that shit. You know what I'm saying? Everything I got now, I had to hustle for. I make more money now than I did when I was signed to that major label.
Then that's a damn shame. So, you know, one of the things I wanted to ask you, Spice, you real respected in the game. You did a lot of songs with a lot of people, right? One of the ones that people keep asking about is your Tupac collaborations. How did you hook up with him? I had to ask you, bro. They'd have killed.
Well, when I met Pac, he was already a fan, and he had just did Juice, and we was on a set of In My Neighborhood video. He was already a fan, and I was already a fan of him just from seeing Juice and just from hearing around the town, you know, his music with Digital Underground and all of that shit, because we used to perform late nights in Frisco at the Palladium. Me and Hammer used to be there, Digital Underground. I've come through and, you know, spit some shit or whatever. But I heard about him around that time, but he just came up to the video and was like, Spice, you know, what's cracking? And he's spitting that, he knew the words to the fucking Stutter Rap. You know, he was keeping them in his brain with the nod. He was spitting it, you know what I'm saying? I was like, oh, that shit, look, you know the words. And, you know, from then on, that was my nigga, you know what I'm saying? So, and then we just started kicking it. We recorded a lot of songs, but, you know, most of the time we just driving around smoking weed, getting high. You know how we used to do it, eh? We just driving around, niggas have 40 ounces, you know, it was the 90s. We got 40s in Hennessy, and we hollering at females riding down the block, 5-6 deep in the car, riding around. We be riding around Lake Barron or something, you know what I'm saying? Where they just named the street after him. Tupac and MacArthur Way over there by the lake. I was doing Pac when we was like 20 and he was like 19. We couldn't even buy alcohol yet. We was even too young to even buy alcohol.
Hey, this don't count up for both of y'all. Then I'm gonna let you get yours off, Soren. And the 90s was like the ghettoest era ever. What?
Yeah, the 90s was kind of, you know, because everybody was kind of getting used to the game, or, you know, niggas was, you know, a lot of street niggas was just getting used to having money. So, especially legal money through the rap game, you know what I'm saying? It's if they knew how to hold their own and push their own weight and, you know, hustle, how to hustle the game, because it was all about, you know, how good your music was and how you could hustle it. You know, I learned a lot of my tactics, you know, from selling drugs back in the day. You know, if you got the best dope, you know, I just gave out a few of my CDs or tapes that I had made, and I knew it was hot. You know, I knew it was hot. And you give out a few of them, he come the fiends, he come the rap fiends. You know what I'm saying? And, you know, just like Ice-T did the song Pusher. He was talking about, you know, I'm your pusher. He's pushing dope-ass music and dope tapes and sets and CDs back in the day. You know, it switched up to, you know, because, you know, you took that hustle you have in the streets and you put it into your music. You know what I'm saying? So, yeah, hell yeah. A lot of motherfuckers was new to getting money back then. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, that's about the... Go ahead, Sam.
I was going to say the music sold itself because you had a lot of great, not only stories on there, but you had great production with Ant Banks, you had Blackjack, EA Ski, CMT, and they all were on the first album. So what did you see and what did each one of the production people you worked with really bring to the Spice One album that you thought was different and distinctive?
Well, Banks and CMT and EA Ski, all three of them actually played instruments. You know, they all actually knew how to play the keyboard and the guitar, and they knew how to actually make music. You know what I'm saying? That was definitely a plus. It brought out a lot. Brought a lot out in me when I heard real music, chords and strings and shit. You know, my imagination and started just going there. You know what I'm saying? So. You know, it does matter when the beat does bring out something in you as a rap artist. You know, I don't make music. I could have told them what I wanted, and they'd give me exactly what I wanted. Even Slip, you know what I'm saying? Remember Slip? You know, talking about 8 Octel Slip. You know what I wanted? You know they play. You know he knew how to get down. You know, back in the day, artists was real artists, man. You know, they know how to play instruments. So they brought a lot of that. They brought that to me. That was something new to me when I first started dealing with them.
Mm. And then Blackjack also doesn't get a lot of shine, but the Money Gone, man.
Blackjack gets Traveler Side and Money Gone. He's dope, dude. They ain't even. And you know, and that was sleeping on Blackjack, man. You know, they got up on Ant Banks and Ski, but they slept on Blackjack. That nigga was hot. He's still hot.
Yeah, I fuck with Blackjack a couple of times. I think good producers just when you're a good producer and you know who you're fucking with, then shit, it's just automatic. You don't have to sit up and be babysitting a nigga, or you know, you got to tell a motherfucker, you know, what you sound good on, you get me? That should come from the producer, period. You know, I get a lot of niggas who hit me up, you want to send me tracks and shit like that. And they'll feed me thousands and thousands of tracks, you get me? But
it is.
I'm trying to tell a motherfucker, just go back and listen to my last project or the project before that, or go listen to some history of me. And you'll probably get the feeling of what type of shit I like to, you know, like I like to create too. It's really crazy when, you know, the producers that hit you and be like, man, you know, I got the hottest shit. I got the perfect this and perfect that. And then it'd be some totally shit that's out of your era or your, of what you used to. So shout out to you know, real producers who take their time and know the artists that they fuck with, and that when they really trying to produce, when they really trying to produce a beat, whatever it is, you know, motherfuckers study the artists and know, oh man, shit, I know what Spice One like. Listen, you know, listen to this song and listen to this song, shit. He was busting on this and busting on that. So usually producers come in knowing what your flavor should be.
Well, like you said, though, ain't the real producers, they know, you know?
Some dudes out there just turn their shit on and be like, nigga, here, this what I got, nigga, it's hot. And you be like, really? Like, I can't, you know.
Now,
it is what it is.
Now, I think you and Ace, because Ace, you came out before Spice, right?
Yeah.
When did y'all link up? When did you first meet Spice?
What it was that
I met Spice when I started doing Menace, and Barry and what was my other nigga name? Yes.
Jeff Fester.
Jeff and Barry, they ran Jive. Jive had the soundtrack to Menace to Society. And I was a fan of Spice. So with them being fans of MCACMW, you know, me being on the set, and then them being able to hear Menace and all that shit, and then knowing Spice was on the soundtrack, they basically hollered at us to produce a song for Spice on his new record coming up. So we flew up to Oakland, and that's how me and Spice met, and we've been cool ever since.
Is that right? So y'all got the first song y'all did was The Murder Show, right?
Yeah.
AT&T connects an ode to podcast. Connect the alarm, change the podcast you stream. Connect the snooze, 10 more minutes to dream. Connect the shower, lather up with the news, sports talk, comedians, or movie reviews. Connect with that 3-hour philosophy show. Change the drive into work and traffic so slow. Connect the dishes to voices that glow. Thank you to the geniuses of spoken audio. Connect the stories, change your perspective. Connecting changes everything. AT&T.
Welcome to 500 Greatest Songs, a podcast based on Rolling Stone's hugely popular, influential, and sometimes controversial list. I'm Brittany Spanos.
And I'm Rob Sheffield. We're here to shed light on the greatest songs ever made and discover what makes them so great.
Every week, we'll pick a new song from the list and talk about their placement on the revamped 2021 list.
We'll also have guests join us, ranging from the artists themselves to the producers, or simply other writers like ourselves who voted on them.
From classics like Fleetwood Mac's Dreams to the Ronettes' Be My Baby, and modern-day classics like The Killers' Mr. Brightside and Britney Spears' Baby One More Time.
There's so many fascinating stories that have been forgotten, like Midnight Train to Georgia starting with a phone call to Farrah Fawcett, or how the Yeah Yeah Yeahs inspired Kelly Clarkson's banger Since You've Been Gone and Beyoncé's Hold Up. Listen to Rolling Stone's 500 Greatest Songs on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Hey, my name's Jay Shetty, and I'm the host of On Purpose. I just had a great conversation with Michael B. Jordan, and you can listen to it right now. Michael is known for his performances in both film and television. His breakout role was in Fruitvale Station, playing Oscar Grant, which earned him widespread praise and numerous award nominations. His portrayal of Killmonger in Marvel's Black Panther, one of my favorites, further solidified his status as one of Hollywood's leading actors, earning him widespread acclaim for his complex and compelling performance. In our conversation, Michael really opens up. You're going to love listening to it, and I can't wait for you to check it out.
The closest to getting what you want is always the hardest. It's always the feeling when you're getting ready to, you know, people give up right before they get what they've always wanted to get. People quit.
Listen to On Purpose with Jay Shetty on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcast, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Hi, listener. I'm Carol Fisher, the host of The Girlfriends, Our Lost Sister. I'm so excited for you to hear the brand new season.
where we're uncovering a 35-year-old mystery. But for those of you who didn't hear season one or just want to listen to it again, you can now get access to all episodes of that first season of The Girlfriends 100% ad-free through the iHeart True Crime Plus subscription, which is available exclusively on Apple Podcasts. You'll also get access to every single episode of The Girlfriends, Our Lost Sister, ad-free and 1 week early, only available to iHeart True Crime Plus subscribers. So what are you waiting for? Head to Apple Podcasts, search for iHeart True Crime Plus, and subscribe today.
This is Neil Strauss, host of the Tenderfoot TV True Crime Podcast, To Live and Die in LA. I'm here to tell you about the new podcast I've been undercover investigating for the last year and a half. It's called To Die For. Here's a clip.
All these girls were sent out into the world, and they were told, try to meet important men, try to attach yourself to important men.
The voice you're hearing is a Russian model agent telling me about spies sent out to seduce men with political power.
The war in Ukraine is also being fought by all these girls that are all over important cities.
For the first time, a military-trained seduction spy reveals how the Russian government turns sex and love into a deadly weapon.
If you want to kill your target, it's easy. You just seduce him, take him somewhere, start having sex, and then he's very vulnerable, so you can kill him easily.
To Die For is available now. Listen for free on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
I'm telling you, man, the 90s was grimy as hell, man. Everything was about kill him up, shoot him up, bang, bang.
I think the 90s was treacherous for us because we was young niggas coming up out the streets, man.
It was a lot going on.
And not to, you know, downplay the situation, and, you know, because everybody, you know, gangster rap and y'all fucked up niggas' heads and y'all had niggas out, youngsters wanting to be whatever. Well, I grew up in that life. You feel me? It wasn't no rap records for a nigga. You feel me? Shit, nigga, I'm on the block claiming Trag New. And all I thought about was how much money I'm going to make off of serving. You get me? Like I tell people in a lot of interviews, when you come out of that adolescence and you're around the essence of fucking, it's niggas down the street pimping. It's niggas down the street selling dope. It's niggas down the, your dreams of being a fucking, oh, I'm gonna be a fireman. I'm gonna be a policeman when I grow up. I'm gonna be a, nigga, that shit out the window. You get me? And so when rap came, we sort of, you get me, was like, this is gonna be my way out, but not really. Cause nigga, I'm still, you get me? We didn't look at it like, at that time, as this is gonna be my way out. Nigga, I'm finna talk about, nigga, we from Compton and we shoot them up, bang, bang, and it's rough niggas and we sell dope and the police is fucked up and whatever. And so, and I think a lot of niggas was going through that situation around that time. So a lot of niggas from the West Coast, CMW, Spice, fucking Cube, fucking, you know, whoever you was, man, if you came up out of Southern California, Northern California, fuck it, you was probably talking about some street shit.
I mean, yeah, shit. I mean, if you wasn't, I mean, man, if when we used to walk to school, on the way to school, if you didn't, we looked at you. If you didn't sell dope, or if you didn't know all of Too Short songs, you was a bitch ass nigga. You know what I'm saying? On the way to school, we walking, you know what I'm saying? Singing Too Short raps, talking about how much dope we was going to sell when we got out of school, you know? And I don't, we wasn't trying to glorify that shit. You know, we was just, that's just what it was at the time. You know, you know, shit, the it was dope and drugs and guns all over the motherfucking place. Couldn't help but run into that shit. No. And then to talk about it was entertaining to people. So, you know, you make the motherfucking words rhyme. You a natural poet. You throw that shit down. Man, you're going, motherfuckers going to feel you. So, you know, but the thing, you know, like songs like Welcome to the Ghetto, you know, I had to write something describing, you know, how it was out there. And, you know, we ain't the motherfuckers that you think we ain't just sitting out here trying to pop motherfuckers, shoot motherfuckers, jack motherfuckers and all that shit. We out here really trying to make money. Because you know, that was the American dream back then. You know what I'm saying? Look, you know, for us as youngsters, as kids on the block, we seen that as, you know, we gonna get paid like Phoenix Mitchell and Freeway Rick Mem and shit. You know what I'm saying? We finna get paid like that because, you know, it wasn't no, you know, we wouldn't think about like say being no fireman or no doctor, shit, a lawyer or nothing. You know what I'm saying? That was so far fetched from us. You know what I'm saying? Like, hell no. So, I mean, you know, we was getting money any way we could, shit. And it was literally art imitating life, you know. For real. You know, it wasn't no fake shit or niggas was making up, you know.
Spice, let me ask you this, man. You always had a real unique flow. That was the first thing that caught me about you. And I noticed you had a lot of patois infused in your rhymes, you know, like the reggae shit, man. And you had a little stutter step rhyme, man. How did you develop that, man?
I listened to a lot of reggae when I was a youngster. I heard the styles that they was doing, like they would, you know, they would stutter in their own little way. And I would try to catch it and do my own little thing, even the flows or whatever. I'm like, ooh, that's a dope flow. Maybe I could put that to a rap beat and shit, but just spit my own shit. It's like I've been working on, I don't know, and it's what I'm gonna do, if I'm gonna do it or not, because it's like it's a opposite of what Bad Boys, the song Bad Boys. Mm-hmm. Bad Boys, what you gonna do? What you gonna do when they come for you? And it's like, what you gonna do when the bad boy come for you? Ooh, I listen, what you gonna do when the bad boy come for you? Cricket officer, what you gonna do when the bad boy come for you? Ooh. You know, so I'm stuttering the shit up in the air or whatever, doing my little shit. But, you know, I always was into reggae music like that. You know what I'm saying? And so, yeah, you gonna hear reggae flow. I hit up Doc a few days ago, DOC. Mm-hmm. Like, yeah, you know, I got that reggae flow listening to you and KRS-One and shit and all the other reggae artists out there. So I just dig reggae shit. I listen to it a lot. You know, I like to smoke weed with it shit. So you might walk up on me. I'm reggae'd out, you know what I'm saying? Just blowing, just listening to Bob Marley or Ziggy Marley or some old shit. You know, so yeah, hell yeah.
Did you like Angel Boss, huh?
Bougie Bonton, hell yeah. That was the homie Ranking Screw, all of my guys, you know. My reggae name is Fire Thief. So, you know, when you see me, if you're the rock star, because it said Fire Thief. CBS one originally used to be a gangster, a Fire Thief, you know, because I steal all the lighters and shit.
Fire's hard.
Like, don't give me the lights on.
Hey, this is a question more for you and Abe, man. You know, you guys kind of paved the way for these cats to be able to do what they want to do today, you know, say what they want to say. You guys were kind of like the freedom of speech fighters back in the day. Y'all had C. Dolores Tucker out there talking about y'all. Y'all had Reverend Calvin Butts rolling over y'all CDs and shit, man. Did that ever fuck with y'all a little bit?
Nah, I kind of did. I was digging it. I was like, that look like my shit out there. They rolling over. Damn, that was my CD. They just rolled over. Whoa. At least we know who's making noise.
It didn't really bother a motherfucker. I guess because we grew up with the thinking of all publicity is good publicity. So you can't get no shit. What? I'm already looked at as bad. So how bad can that be? Because you got a senator talking about a Compton's Most Wanted record, or you know. Or Sony deciding to double sticker my album. You get me? The first album that was ever double stickered because of the content. I just looked at it as all this shit that goes on, and it's always this free speech. You know, the outcome of free speech, what it's supposed to be. But I guess in the whole, I never was threatened by the shit. Like, as long as a motherfucker gonna keep being able to press up MCA records back then, ain't gonna scare a motherfucker. Like I said, Sony didn't do shit but double sticker my next record after all that controversy. Fuck it. We gonna say the views of this artist are his and his only. You think they was gonna pull my We Come Strap record or whatever and be like, nah, we can't put this shit out? Hell fucking no.
So, that helped y'all sell more records, didn't it?
I mean, in a way. Basically, I mean, because, yeah. And like I said, it was a lot of political shit attached to that campaign of let's go after those guys calling women bitches, and let's go after those guys calling women whores and talking about fuck the police. And, you know, we're gonna build our political American platform off of going after those guys. But you see that shit every year, don't you, America? How many times a motherfucker done used a motherfucker to build their political platform? You get me? So at the time, we was just the face of it. You get me? I'm surprised they ain't going after the hottie thotty girls and, you know, the half naked women and, you know, the day to day. But, you know, everything is clear now. You feel me? So we should have that freedom of speech, and ladies do what they want to do, and we as men do what we want to do as far as this music shit is concerned, because basically it's motherfuckers making music and just expressing whatever the fuck. And if you're gonna be dumb as fuck to go out and do, or you know, try to live, motherfucker, go slap on a cake, nigga, and jump off the roof, nigga, and be Superman then. You know,
this is basically thug therapy for me. You know what I'm saying? Like, I'd use my you know, aggression I might get, you know, back in the day, I might have got pissed off, you know, wanted to do this and do that, you know, and you throw it into your music, you know what I'm saying? It's therapy for a thug nigga, you know what I'm saying? Like, I always needed my music, you know what I'm saying? Like, you know, when I got mad or got pissed off or something, then it gave me more energy in the booth, or I would use that shit, you know what I'm saying? So a lot of the songs that you guys hear on my records, you know, I was really feeling that way. You know what I'm saying? It wasn't just, you know, all got to come off. I was really feeling that way about shit that went down in the streets or anything that was going on. You know, I was really pissed off. You know what I'm saying? So, and I used it. So, I mean, shit. I'm saying all of that to say, hell yeah, you know, you gotta stay on this shit and keep shit real. That's how your music lasts. You know what I'm saying? Over these real years.
You know, we saw Ink getting to acting back in the day, and he got some stuff coming out. Now we actually started to shoot movies 2024, the first quarter of 2024. We actually go start shooting some movies. Have you ever thought about getting into acting and doing some shit?
Yeah, definitely. You know, especially if, you know, if the role fit my character and shit, you know, I would say I wouldn't even have to act. I would just, you know, just say what I would naturally say.
Well, as you know, as y'all know, because I think all four of us on here don't have we've mentioned something online and you look up and see another motherfucker doing it. So I learned my lesson with that. But
right.
Me and A got some concepts that we're working on, man, and we shoot movies next year. And we really want to get you involved on the Soren is involved with it too. And we gonna do some real fly, amazing shit, dog, that's pretty much gonna kill the game. But I'm not gonna mention that. We talk about that off the air, because you know you got the haters out there right now listening, man. And the cats that be stealing got so much money, they can take your idea that you plan to do and go execute that motherfucker next week. And you'll look up and be like, damn, I had the same idea. How did he find out like that?
Right, really. That's real shit. You know how they say, you know, it can be, it's haters out, it's rich, it's haters out there with money too. Yeah, all the haters ain't broke. These motherfuckers out there with money that's hating on you and you got less than they do.
Yeah, that's
like, the, yeah, rock with it. You know what I'm saying?
That's the cool thing about it. It won't include you on it. It won't include you at all.
It won't include you at all.
They go do their own whack version, some shit you don't thought of. And you be like, damn, man, them motherfuckers done stole my shit. And it don't even make no sense to even talk about it, because everybody else will look at you like, oh, man, you ain't think of that.
Yeah, exactly. I remember I used, that. You know, I used to walk around before I dropped 187 proof. I used to walk around and I'd be spitting it to the homies and shit all the time. And some of my close homies was like, man, don't say that shit no more. Like, don't rap that song no more. Don't rap that shit to nobody.
And they was right. Your motherfucker out there doing it.
Yeah, exactly. Your motherfucker would have took that whole concept and rocked with it, you know, and got it to the radio before I did. You know what I'm saying? It would have been a rap.
Don't trip off my shit. That's just my smoke machine right now. That's, you know, they got that good camera effect. You like that, huh, Steel?
It's all good. I see
you. Like, you like them camera tricks, huh? They get them up because smoked up. It started flaming up on the nigga and coming in. My nigga was sitting back like, what the fuck going on right there?
Yeah, they got a fog machine over there, yo.
Yeah, it's cracking right now. Yeah,
I got a fog machine.
I got a fog machine right here. Let's take it out.
So,
it's broke. It's broke. Fog machine broke. Damn, I got to fix it.
You got a real fog machine over there, Spice?
Well, that's my active right there. See, I do it.
He said that's my active.
Yeah, you know, I can get it in if I need.
Hey, so you know what? Speaking of active, man, now I hate to come out and ask questions that motherfuckers don't ask a million times already, man. What was going on the movie set, man? Was you out there beating niggas up, Spice?
Nah, you know, I actually was just, I didn't even see it. You know what I'm saying? I was just, I just literally told, you know, when I seen Alan, I said, man, go, my nigga, go. And I seen niggas try to chase him up the hill, and I went down, and I looked, hey, what the fuck y'all doing? Like, cut that shit, you know what I'm saying? But, you know, by then, the damage was already done, you know what I'm saying? So, I mean,
so did Alan use really good, because you was there too, ain't right?
I wasn't there. I wasn't shooting that day. I was on the set every day but that day. I think I had a show where I was out of town, so I wasn't on set that day.
Man, them was go down back then, boy.
I shouldn't have. I mean, I don't know, hey, if I ever told you this, but when I, you know, Pop came and got me from the airport that day, and I was drinking Jack and Coke all the way there, nigga. From so by the time I landed, you know, Pop picked me up and he showed me, you know, what the newspaper and shit. You know what I'm saying? Yeah. So like, and it said in the newspaper, you know, Tupac comes to the set of Minister Society drunk and high, can't remember his lines. So the Hughes brothers fired him, right? And he was like, man, they didn't even call me and say nothing. And I'm like, you know, I'm like, damn, for real, you know. But I was twisted, man. And you know, he was like, I'm gonna beat they motherfucking ass, right? And so naturally, you know what I'm gonna start saying. I said, nigga, you ain't gonna do nothing, nigga.
You ain't forgetting this shit.
I didn't know they was gonna even be up there. I had no idea they was gonna be there. And I kept, you know, talking shit. You ain't gonna do that, nigga. You ain't gonna do that. I kept saying that, you know what I'm saying? And he was like, oh, I'm gonna beat that. I'm gonna beat that. And I'm, you know, but I didn't know that they was gonna be up there and shit. You know what I'm saying? That's why when I seen him, I'm like, man, cut that shit. You know what I'm saying? Like, this is the nigga video shooting problem is up here acting crazy and shit. You know, but shout out to the Hughes brothers, man. I love the Niggas. You know what I'm saying? At least they tried to put me in some shit. You know what I'm saying?
Who's gonna be your role? Who's your role gonna be, Spikes?
I was gonna be Old Dog.
That's right. You told me the last one.
About to be Sharik. I had the script. You know what I'm saying? But my manager at the time was, he just wasn't really handling his fucking business. So I had to fire that nigga. You know what I'm saying? He had to get the fuck up out of there. I was hot over this shit. I even, after I realized that the shit wasn't happening, I drunk like a whole thing of Carlos Rossi. It had to ended up in the hospital and shit. I was mad as hell.
For real, man. You know what, man? I think a lot of people, man, a lot of the homies suffer from having bad management back then. Because I think about, right, like even Eight, for example, the role he played in Menace. Eight was supposed to go on to me and had the same kind of movie career almost that Cube had. Wouldn't you say so, Sean? Wouldn't you agree to an extent?
Yeah.
I mean, I was in Cold War. So, yeah, that's what's
going on. Unfortunately, like I said, unfortunately, you know.
I think you can still do it, though, my nigga. You know,
It
went the way it went for a reason, and you know, you got to take steps. Like I said, I always tell the same analogy to my son. Some motherfuckers get there overnight. Some motherfuckers, it take 20 years to get there and build it up, and you got to take the long road. Don't mean you ain't going to get there. It's just for some of us, man, it just take a longer walk. You feel me?
I think it might be better today, those fights, because like I said, man, the stuff we about to do in 2024 gonna be groundbreaking. It can't nobody do it but us, bro. We gonna reap the financial benefits off the shit without somebody else doing it and throwing us peanuts.
Yeah.
Yeah, you would think a motherfucker would respect the motherfucker's talent and you know what he done been through and all his hard work of writing and coming up with songs and stories and you know trying to be able to hang with every other motherfucking significant artist out there, and it's just some motherfuckers come along and go, nah, you don't deserve nothing. Here, nigga, take this $10 while I take this $10,000. You feel me? It's just some niggas who felt like that. And I say those are the niggas, like, you wish that every motherfucker would be on the up and up. Like I tell you all the time still, it just don't happen. You feel me? It just don't happen. If a motherfucker feel they can fuck you, they're going to fuck you. And they don't feel no remorse about it.
Ain't that crazy? I think we all got them stories. Hey, Spice, let me ask you this, man. When you was with Jive at the time, man, did you ever talk to Barry Wise about the financial disparities that was going on up there?
Man, did you even have a direct connection to Barry and Jeff, or did you go everything through your manager?
I did for a while, and then they didn't, you know, they didn't talk to nobody but my manager. At the end, you know, I couldn't get Barry on the phone or Jeff on the phone at the end. And that hurt my feelings, dude. That really, you know, because they brought me up there and they used to throw me birthday parties, you know, you give me my platinum and gold plaques and push my record and all of that, you know, and all of a sudden the water cut off and I didn't know why, you know, and my manager was, it seemed like he was working for them. He wasn't working for me no more, you know.
So Spice, when you were going gold and having all this success and having these big records, big videos, soundtracks, all this stuff, you literally only got your advances? Nobody ever.
I'm just now starting to see it, residuals. Because, you know, I don't know what happened with Jive or if they still out there, you know, or not, but, you know, I still get my residuals, get my royalties. Some I'm not getting, some I'm working on, but I still see it. You know what I'm saying? But 30 years later, you know what I'm saying?
Well, you know, Spice, I'm going to tell you something, man, and you got to look into this, man, and you maybe me and you and Soren and A can have a conversation once we get off this show. All of those albums have a reversion on them to where you may own a lot of them albums right now.
Yeah.
Right. Right.
You may own them. You may get some of this stuff. Because I know Bone is about to get their stuff back. They're about to get their albums back right now. And you should be in the same position, man, because it's a lot of stuff that it's a lot of stuff that people did that was crooked back then, because you got to remember.
Yeah.
At the time when y'all signed y'all contracts, man, it wasn't no digital. So how can they be selling digital albums or streaming digital albums when they don't really have a right to stream?
Well, yeah, it wasn't no such thing as the internet.
Yeah, exactly. So we definitely got to have a conversation, man. And I know it's a lot of people trying to take advantage of that right now. Like me and A had a guy to hear this man talking about some where A may want to go buy a car or he may want to go buy some rims. I said, what the fuck? Okay. So they pretty much wanted to buy the rights to this album for like, and I ain't even going to talk about the sum, but it was embarrassing. I said, why would he sell y'all that when that's what he get a year off his royalties?
Exactly.
That's crazy.
It's just some people that feel like artists from our generation are desperate, right? You know, they feel a lot of artists from our era are broke, you know, because let's face it, we never did reap the rewards from our work. I mean, niggas was having gold and platinum records, and if that shit was today, you get me, you'd be reaping the rewards from your gold and platinum and double platinum records. But shit, back then, you could have a motherfucking platinum record and you still living on the block. You know what I'm saying? It just was shit that was unheard of. And for a motherfucker to take all his hard work and, like I said again, trying to come up and create butt fucking shit, trying to create music that, you know, when you got competition like niggas like Spice One and Ice Cube and Scarface and LL Cool J and, you get me? You're trying to come up with decent material to look up. And, nigga, a year later, nigga, it's like, damn, my record went platinum, but I ain't getting not a dollar. Like a nigga ain't sent me a check for nothing. They done came knocking on my door talking about it's time to do another album. I'm like, what the, you know, but it's unfortunate that we went through that era. You know, now it's streaming and digital and niggas can push their own shit and you ain't got to go through a label and all that shit. Nigga can pocket all his money from fucking, let me drop my shit on a SoundCloud or this or that. You get me? I'm going to get all my bread. And don't be a popular little artist who, you know, city getting behind them and fans. And next thing you know, nigga, he got a million streams on whatever. Niggas collecting real money nowadays. It was hard.
And that shit from fucking United Masters or something.
So, you know, we just got to fight a little longer, man. You know, to get on justice.
AT&T connects an ode to podcast. Connect the alarm, change the podcast you stream. Connect the snooze, 10 more minutes to dream. Connect the shower, lather up with the news, sports talk, comedians, or movie reviews. Connect with that 3-hour philosophy show. Change the drive into work and traffic so slow. Connect the dishes to voices that glow. Thank you to the geniuses of spoken audio. Connect the stories, change your perspective. Connecting changes everything. AT&T.
Welcome to 500 Greatest Songs, a podcast based on Rolling Stone's hugely popular, influential, and sometimes controversial list. I'm Brittany Spanos.
And I'm Rob Sheffield. We're here to shed light on the greatest songs ever made and discover what makes them so great.
Every week, we'll pick a new song from the list and talk about their placement on the revamped 2021 list.
We'll also have guests join us, ranging from the artists themselves to the producers, or simply other writers like ourselves who voted on them.
From classics like Fleetwood Mac's Dreams to the Ronettes' Be My Baby, and modern-day classics like The Killers' Mr. Brightside and Britney Spears' Baby One More Time.
There's so many fascinating stories that have been forgotten, like Midnight Train to Georgia starting with a phone call to Farrah Fawcett, or how the Yeah Yeah Yeahs inspired Kelly Clarkson's banger Since You've Been Gone and Beyoncé's Hold Up. Listen to Rolling Stone's 500 Greatest Songs on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Hey, my name's Jay Shetty, and I'm the host of On Purpose. I just had a great conversation with Michael B. Jordan, and you can listen to it right now. Michael is known for his performances in both film and television. His breakout role was in Fruitvale Station, playing Oscar Grant, which earned him widespread praise and numerous award nominations. His portrayal of Killmonger in Marvel's Black Panther, one of my favorites, further solidified his status as one of Hollywood's leading actors, earning him widespread acclaim for his complex and compelling performance. In our conversation, Michael really opens up. You're going to love listening to it, and I can't wait for you to check it out.
The closest to getting what you want is always the hardest. It's always the feeling when you're getting ready to, you know, people give up right before they get what they've always wanted to get. People quit.
Listen to On Purpose with Jay Shetty on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcast, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Hi, listener. I'm Carol Fisher, the host of The Girlfriends, Our Lost Sister. I'm so excited for you to hear the brand new season where we're uncovering a 35-year-old mystery. But for those of you who didn't hear season one or just want to listen to it again, you can now get access to all episodes of that first season of The Girlfriends 100% ad-free through the iHeart True Crime Plus subscription, which is available exclusively on Apple Podcasts. You'll also get access to every single episode of The Girlfriends, Our Lost Sister, ad-free and 1 week early, only available to iHeart True Crime Plus subscribers. So what are you waiting for? Head to Apple Podcasts, search for iHeart True Crime Plus, and subscribe today.
This is Neil Strauss, host of the Tenderfoot TV True Crime Podcast, To Live and Die in LA. I'm here to tell you about the new podcast I've been undercover investigating for the last year and a half. It's called To Die For. Here's a clip.
All these girls were sent out into the world and they were told, try to meet important men, try to attach yourself to important men.
The voice you're hearing is a Russian model agent telling me about spies sent out to seduce men with political power.
The war in Ukraine is also being fought by all these girls that are all over important cities.
For the first time, a military-trained seduction spy reveals how the Russian government turns sex and love into a deadly weapon.
If you want to kill your target, it's easy. You just seduce him, take him somewhere, start having sex, and then he's very vulnerable, so you can kill him easily.
To Die For is available now. Listen for free on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Hey, Spice, let me ask you this, bro. You are a phenomenal artist. Aiden's a phenomenal artist. Do you ever feel like you get the respect from the industry? I know you got the respect from the people, right? But do you ever feel like you get the respect from, like, the powers that be, like the Ghazis and the different people that's in position to do stuff? Do you ever feel like that you get the respect you're supposed to?
Well, the you know, certain fans out there, or they just a fan, they're just regular fans of hip hop. It's hard for me to register it when they start mentioning Bay Area artists and they don't say Spice One. That right there, that hurt a little bit, you know what I'm saying? Knowing that, you know, 187 proof ass nigga from the Bay, you know what I'm saying? Like, this is me saying this shit in 92, 93. You can tell that the East Bay was his home, you know. There was no other artist representing the Bay like that back then, except for, I think, Mac Dre was. You know what I'm saying? Every artist was representing, you know, where they was from. Or I'm from Oakland. I'm from Vallejo. I'm from Hayward. But I put it in my song. You know what I'm saying? I represented my town or whatever. But I just really wanted to represent the Bay as a whole because I felt like, you know, I wasn't just rapping to one town. I was rapping to the world, really. You know what I'm saying? And I want to represent the Bay Area And it seemed like, you know, you when you don't get your props, I don't get my props for that. You know, it kind of hurt a little bit, you know what I'm saying? But I know who I am, and I know the people who respect me, and that's enough for me to not even trip on that shit, you know what I'm saying? as far as every time I feel that way, all I do is I think, you know, damn, the first time I landed in New York City, Run DMC was sitting there waiting for me. They was waiting for me. They was sitting there waiting to see Spice One get out the car. I still had these cats on my wall in my room, and they wait for me when I land. So, and I talk to them, and they Spice, you know, I'm like, what y'all doing here? Hey, man, we wait for you. What's up? You know, like, you know, what's going on with you, Spice? And that was that alone, that memory alone is enough for me to say, you know, hey, shit, you know, I don't give a fuck. You know what I'm saying? I know who I am and shit. I know what I did, and memories like going to Japan and seeing my Japanese fans and seeing them wait there at the airport for me in crowds, and me thinking, you know, oh man, is they waiting for me? Are they there for me? Like for real? You know, after all of these years, you know, they at the airport waiting for me, and yeah, they was at the airport waiting for Spice One with all my CDs and my old albums and showing me stuff, you know, and that was way in Japan, so. I know who I am, so you know.
You're just not going to Japan, Spice.
Well, no, this was even back in. I've been there a few times. Back in when I first landed there, first time I went there was like maybe 2000 or 2010 or something like that. And that's what it was. You know what I'm saying? And when stuff like that, when you experience stuff like that. You know, you say to yourself, shit, you know, well, just because these motherfuckers don't know who I am, shit, the rest of the world is up on their shit. Like, shit, Japan know who Spice One is, and Germany know who Spice One is, and Australia know who Spice One is. They come to the shows, and they represent, you know what I'm saying? If a few cats hate and act like they don't know who I am or don't give me my proper respect or when respect is due, I don't give a fuck because I know who I am in around the world, not just.
But I also not just you,
right? Really,
I know it's so going into our
world. Really, I don't never look for you get me, because I know what I've done, I know what I do, as far as being, you know, whatever MC8 or whatever. But beyond that, you know, trying to just be a good motherfucker, a good nigga today. You know what I'm saying? A grown ass man. Do I look for respect or whatever from other motherfuckers? You know, especially a lot of industry motherfuckers. I just put it like, you know, you ain't gotta like what MC8 has done as far as musically or whatever's your flavor. But you're going to respect what MC8 has done as far as the hip hop is concerned and what music is concerned. So that's just the way I feel about it. Is a lot of people going to acknowledge that? No. And sometimes that's cool. You know, if a nigga want to say under their breath or behind closed doors, nigga, you know, a nigga was significant. 8 had, you know, this, or, you know, I used to bang 8 when I was in hard times, or nigga, when we used to do this and we was hood niggas and we used to put that tape on and roll through looking for whatever. And not just on that type of tip, just being able to tell stories and be a significant of pillar, so to speak. You know, I'm just one brick on the motherfucking the house of hip hop, so to speak. You get me? But niggas need to know I'm a solid brick in that motherfucker, and you can respect that. You ain't gotta like my fucking music. You feel me? But you know. Recognize that and respect the fact that a nigga is a significant brick in that motherfucking house, in that foundation, you know?
That's for real. And you know what? I'm going to ask this question kind of for both of y'all, right? And I always wanted to ask y'all this, like, right? Because you mentioned that you went to the East Coast, Spice, and, you know, you had Run DMC, you know, legends, waiting for you at the airport just to chop it up with you. What fan of your music surprised you the most? I'll let you go first, Spice. Who fuck with your music that really surprised you?
And it was a few. Jamie Foxx, man, that was crazy. I had wrapped my homeboy Hummer with my album cover, and we was riding through L.A. And you know, it was a limo pulled up behind us. Remember the Nico 8, the hotel? Yeah. Okay, we pulled up right in front of that motherfucker, man. And a limo pulled up behind us. The limo driver hop out. He like, you know, is Spice One in this Hummer? Is he in there? And I'm like, you know, I said, who is that? I said, ask him who in the limo. He said, Jamie Foxx is in the limo. Shit. So I'm like, man, get the fuck out of here. Ain't no damn Jamie Foxx in the limo. And so I hopped out the passenger side, out the back passenger seat, you know, and sure enough, Jamie hopped out. The suit on and all, clean in the motherfucker. He spies. I'm like, oh shit, you know what I'm saying? Like, what the fuck? Like, okay, what's up, man? And we took a picture, chopped it up for a minute, you know, and you know, he told me he listened to my music, he knew what it was and shit. And that was that type of shit is just enough for me to, you know, any motherfucker who act like they don't know who a nigga is, I don't, you know, I ain't tripping, nigga. Jamie Foxx know who I am, nigga. You know what I'm saying?
Crazy shit. Who else fucked you head up?
Mike Epps. It was on two occasions. He was out here in Vegas, you know, and he was with some of my guys from North Richmond. You know, and AQ know about the North Richmond too.
Oh, definitely.
You know, Mike Epps seemed like he'd be up on shit, though.
Yeah, he
shout out to Mike, that's the homie.
Yeah, he's a real dude, you know what I'm saying? He was with some of them North Richmond niggas out here in Vegas, and they called me like maybe 4 or 5 in the morning, like, man, you know, we got Mike Epps over here. He passed out, and he told us he fucked with you know what I'm saying? And we told him we knew you, and he don't believe us. He wants us to hit you up. But he passed out before we can get in touch with you. And I said, man, you know, come get me. You know, so they came and got me. And came swoop me up, man. I go to the head of the hotel. Sure enough, you know, Mike Epps was in there. You know what I'm saying? He was out. And so I woke him up like Method Man woke up Red Man on
How High?
On How High. You know, I turned on 187 proof, and I had one lit up, and I'm like, dude, pulling on the corner with it. You know, he woke up to me, you know, spitting 187 proof with the blood. And I passed it to him. He was like, oh shit, he's like, Spice Bud, nigga, I told him about you. You know, that was some of the coolest shit I could ever encounter. You know what I'm saying? So shout out to Mike Epps, man, real dude. You know what I'm saying?
That sound like a hell of a motherfucking dream right there. He probably woke up like, what the fuck is going on? Okay, you play your story, you're sleeping, you wake up, and Spice got a blunt.
I didn't just give up and see what they might have approved.
That'd be crazy.
For sure.
Hey, who fucked you up? I know Britney Spears, she had been on MC8.
Who fucked me up was the regular motherfucker who hit my DM today and told me he was banging my new record. That's what fucks me up. That's what I appreciate.
That's definitely something you can appreciate.
I appreciate a regular ass motherfucker who can steal, a regular motherfucker who's in my age bracket, who can still turn on some new shit and go, man, I was just banging this shit earlier. Or niggas who reminisce about, you know, past songs. You know, I appreciate that. You get me? And then, you know, you can get on shit like Instagram now and see LeBron James in the back of his, you know, way on the way to the game, bumping some straight up minutes. So, you know.
He didn't know
all the words and shit. You know, you Cleveland niggas, man. You know, y'all gotta get the words down, man. But I appreciate my nigga because my nigga appreciates real.
What does he tear up?
My nigga appreciates some real motherfucking hip hop. You get me? And not to just be on some commercialized shit, because you know when it comes to LeBron, they expect him to listen to some Drake or some 21 or some, yeah. You know, they expect LeBron to listen to them cats, but you know, to see him in the back of his ride on the way to the game and banging some straight up menace and trying to mimic the words, man, that was pretty cool.
Yeah, yeah. Well, you know, I got this today, man. I tried to tell Aid on his DM, but he hasn't responded. But let him know that his last album, Lesson 2, is a real dope hip hop album. It's actually one of me and my girl's favorite albums this year. And this is from a dude named Graylin D. So shout out to Graylin.
Yeah, good shout out, Graylin. Like I said, average people, man. That's what's cracking, man.
Yeah, so that's cool as hell.
And I think that's why 30 years later, man, y'all still doing shows. Still got people, man, that love what it is that y'all do. Because it's all about the common man. Y'all were able to make a connection with the common man.
And I think that's very important. Each other. I'll see you this Saturday, nigga.
Oh, yeah, we finna turn up. You already know.
Y'all going to Ohio, right?
Yeah.
The Minister Society tour.
Yeah, only Tyron gonna be out there. You know, Tyron is funny because he always called me. You know how Tyron talk. He say, hey, Steel.
They put 187 on the bill too, so you know it's all cracking.
Code 187. I need to hear code up. I need to hear him out. I need to hear so
it's gonna be a gangster party, man, soon.
It's all good, man. So sure, you know what it is.
This episode, man, is gonna drop on Thanksgiving, man. So we wanna wish everybody out there, man, a happy Thanksgiving, man. What you cooking, eh?
I ain't cooking shit, nigga. I'm eating. I ain't cooking.
Hey, gonna be over there eating chitlins and smoking them a blunt, man.
Well, do that shit. We do not mess with Porky Pig, man.
I don't fuck with no chitlins either. I used to like a motherfucker.
I ain't too hot on the chitlins either. I ain't looking for them this year. I'll probably be doing this.
Everybody just stay up, have a safe Thanksgiving, man, and we see y'all on the flip, man. That's what it do.
Well, that concludes another episode of the Gangsta Chronicles podcast. Be sure to download the iHeart app and subscribe to the Gangsta Chronicles podcast. For Apple users, find a purple mic on the front of your screen, subscribe to the show, leave a comment and rating. Executive producers for the Gangsta Chronicles podcast are Norman Steele, Aaron MCA Tyler. Our visual media director is Brian Wyatt, and our audio editor is Taylor Hayes. The Gangsta Chronicles is a production of iHeart Media Network and the Black Effect Podcast Network. For more podcasts from iHeartRadio, visit the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you listen to your podcasts.
Welcome to 500 Greatest Songs, a podcast based on Rolling Stone's hugely popular, influential, and sometimes controversial list. I'm Brittany Spanos.
And I'm Rob Sheffield. We're here to shed light on the greatest songs ever made and discover what makes them so great.
From classics like Fleetwood Mac's Dreams to the Ronettes' Be My Baby, and modern day classics like The Killers' Mr. Brightside.
Listen to Rolling Stone's 500 Greatest Songs on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Hey, I'm Jay Shetty, and I'm the host of the On Purpose podcast, and I had the opportunity to talk to one of Hollywood's major icons, Michael B. Jordan. In our conversation, Michael shares the highs, the lows, and everything in between, offering a genuine glimpse into his world.
The closest to getting what you want is always the hardest. People give up right before they get what they've always wanted to get.
Listen to On Purpose with Jay Shetty on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
The Therapy for Black Girls podcast is your space to explore mental health, personal development, and all of the small decisions we can make to become the best possible versions of ourselves. I'm your host, Dr. Joy Harden Bradford, a licensed psychologist in Atlanta, Georgia. And I can't wait for you to join the conversation every Wednesday. Listen to the Therapy for Black Girls podcast on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts. Take good care, and we'll see you there.
Every week on Talk Easy with Sam Fragoso, I invite an artist, writer, or politician to come to the table and speak from the heart in ways you probably haven't heard from them before. Some of my favorites are with Tom Hanks, Questlove, and Cate Blanchett. In recent weeks, I talked to actor Dan Levy, director Ava DuVernay, and the editor of The New Yorker, David Remnick. You can listen to Talk Easy on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Imagine you're a fly on the wall at a dinner between the mafia, the CIA, and the KGB. That's where my new podcast begins. This is Neil Strauss, host of To Live and Die in L.A., and I wanted to quickly tell you about an intense new series about a dangerous spy taught to seduce men for their secrets and sometimes their lives. From Tenderfoot TV, this is To Die For. To Die For is available now. Listen for free on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.